Back in 1991, Mr. Big hit number one in 15 countries with the song To Be With You, and then soon after, they became a literal worldwide sensation, but they sadly broke up from 2002 to 2009. But then, in the last 2 years, great news, they're back recording and touring. Brand new album is out. We're going to talk about that and much more right now with Eric Martin, lead singer of Mr. Big. How's everything going?
It's going good, Dave-O. It's really good. After all that, you know, they broke up and then they got back together. It's like, as the world turns. It's like some kind of a weird soap opera. Rock and roll
happy
around the world.
Right?
To Be With You, the gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah. Well,
you know, the thing about To Be With You is like, it was like when that song became a hit, it put like a lot more stamps in my passport than just, playing at the local club down the street, you know?
Yeah. 15 years of that. Well, let's talk about that, but let's start off with the new stuff here. I want to talk about that because the new album is called What If.
Right.
For somebody that hasn't heard the record yet, how has the music of Mr. Big kind of evolved over the years, and what's this new record like?
This is actually more of a kind of a classic rock album. I mean, if you've listened to Mr. Big, you know, it's obviously not just To Be With You. You know, you got the pyrotechnics of Billy Sheehan and Paul Gilbert, original players. It's kind of like hard rock and roll. Classic, you know, derivative of like the 70s and stuff. I don't know how this record actually came together so fast, too, because we only had like about 2 weeks to record it and about a month to write it. Okay. It was one of those things where like, yeah, you want to do an album? Okay, you got to do it now. Because we had like a window of opportunity to work with this great producer, this guy, Kevin Shirley, who produced Journey and Iron Maiden and Black Rose and everybody, but this guy was, you know, on call and completely busy, so we had to work with this guy, and we kind of threw it out there, but it worked. This is the first time we got together in 15 years to do an album, and I guess, you know, collectively we made it work for the first time.
Yeah.
For the first time, and you know, there's all kinds of weird innuendos about that, but you know, there was some drama back in 2002, and even way back in the 90s too. But man, this is this great. You know, the band's great friends, and really, over the 15 years, somebody learned something.
Yeah, like you said,
maybe it was me. I don't know.
Well, all of you in 2002, like you said. You came back in 2009. And so from what I read, the fans basically begged you to come back. They wouldn't stop. They were relentless. You know,
they were.
What was it like? How overwhelming were they?
Well, it was every time. Okay, we all put out solo albums, and we all doing like some projects. You know, the guitar players were doing clinics. And every time we got around to people they would have Mr. Big albums or Mr. Big posters or pictures with me in the long hair 90s or something, you know? And they go, yeah, we really want Mr. Big to get back together. And I was like, I have a new solo album. Yeah, forget it. I don't care about that. You know, they wanted to know all about the past and even like a whole new generation now of maybe it's their younger brothers or younger sisters, but I see a lot more young people out in the audience now. But the fans, I guess they brought us back together. You know, maybe some of the guys got really tired of answering questions about when Mr. Big's going to get back together. So,
well, and I know in 2002, I mean, you may not use this word. From what I read, it was kind of messy, quote unquote. But I mean, so in 2002, someone tells you, "Hey, you guys will be getting back together later." I mean, would you ever have believed it was possible?
No.
To get back together? No. No way.
No, not at all. No, I mean, I hoped for a long, long time. But I mean, as far as we, you know, when we actually broke up, you know, years ago, there was a lot of animosity and stuff, you know, within the band. But I kind of look at it like this, you know, you kind of lose the taste for hate after five or six years go by, and you realize, hey, these are really talented people. And I've played with a lot of great rock and roll bands and artists, but I don't know. Mr. Big's the best band I've ever been in. Really energetic on stage and I love the creative outlet. I mean, I've written some really good songs with solo stuff, but I think I wrote my best stuff with Mr. Big, and we're trying to capture that again, you know. And it's not hard. I mean, we're a little older, but we still have the spark, you know.
Yeah. So 1988, you guys kind of got together. You know, Billy left. David Lee Roth put together a new band. You guys came together.
Oh, that, yeah. You're going way back in the beginning.
Yeah. Well, yeah, way back. So how'd you guys all meet then? I want to know how the band actually come together.
Well, I was a solo artist on Capitol Records. And maybe I was like, you know, groomed or something to be like, you know, maybe like Daryl Hall or Paul Young. I was kind of like, it's kind of rock and kind of R&B music. And I don't even know how Billy Sheehan even got my number, but it was, like 88. I just finished the solo album, and he gave me a call out of the blue and said, hey, you know, I heard your voice. I did a song on a soundtrack for a movie called Teachers, kind of came and went. But I wrote a song with Neil Sean from Journey, and it was kind of a heavy metal song. And he heard it, and he said, hey, you know, I want to start a band. I'm not going to be playing with David Lee Roth anymore, and I want to start a band with you. So it was him and I, and we got this kid, Paul Gilbert, who was a kid back then. He was like in his 20s. And Paul used to come and see Billy play when Billy was growing up in Buffalo and playing in a rock band called Talus. And Paul used to come and see it, you know, see him as a fan, and they kind of became friends a little bit. So Paul was enlisted, and we auditioned one guy. It didn't work out, and then we auditioned Pat Torpey, the drummer, and he came in. And we wrote our first album in 8 days. You know, we didn't even know each other. You know, we just kind of just all had the same passion for classic rock. So we did it, and it was pure kismet. I don't know. It was a good chemistry. So that's basically it. And then we got to know each other, and we killed each other. No.
We haven't got it.
That's what happens. No.
So Mr. Big, the name, what's the story behind that?
Oh, Pat actually found an album. I think the album is called, it's from the band Free, you know, with Paul Rogers and Paul Kossoff. It's like, you know, like All Right Now, you know, All Right Now, Baby. It's that band. They had a song on one of their albums, and it was called Mr. Big. It was just like an obscure thing, and Pat thought it would look good, you know, on a T-shirt. And it does.
Yeah.
When you're this big, they call you Mr. Yeah, it was just a simple look. When I look back on it, I go, ah, wow, what were we thinking? It is seems a little, kind of, what's the word I'm thinking of? Contrived or something, but it worked great. It worked great for us. Especially when you had band members like Paul Gilbert coming up with, he wanted to call the band Mars. I wanted to call the band Red House. I don't know why. And Pat, Philly, you know, staunch Republican, wanted Hawks and Doves. And I went, Guns N' Roses might think we stole something from them or something. I don't know. But and Mr. Big came, and it was just a kind of an afterthought. Okay, we got a name. Now let's move on and write some songs.
Yeah. So you did that by 89. You were, you know, part of Atlantic. You were huge. I mean, like, right off the bat, you guys were already huge over in like Asia and Japan. I talked to Firehouse recently and asked them, because they're kind of the same thing. So what is it about that region of the world that loves rock music so much? I mean, do you have any idea? I can't figure it out.
I sort of figured it out. I mean, they just carry a torch for rock and roll, and they just don't give it up. You know, if you got why all the major rock magazines in Japan have like Ritchie Blackmore on the cover. I mean, I don't know what it is. They just love the spirit of rock and roll. They're believers, you know, and they don't let, you know, if, you know, there's all kinds of trends. I mean, there's, you know, not trends or musical trends, the hip hop and rap music and everything. And it goes over, but rock is king. I don't want to get it. Because if I get it and I find the formula, I mean, I really like their loyalty. And they just stay with it. And they also, you know, when Paul Gilbert left, I think in the middle 90s, and we got this kid, Richie Kotzen, who, you know, he was a guitar player for Poison for about an hour and a half. And he also, you know, he's a star, complete star, great singer, great guitar player. But when he played with us, you could totally tell, you know, we had some diminished sales there, you know, and the crowds weren't like they were before, you know, when we were playing Budokans and huge, you know, Osaka domes and all that. Yeah. They don't, you know, they want to keep the original lineup together, and so when actually Mr. Big did get back together with Billy Sheehan, Paul Gilbert, Pat Torpey, and the handsome guy, what's the singer's name, Eric Martin. Well, they were beside themselves. They loved it, you know. And it's a give and take kind of relationship. We've given so much. They've given back. You know, just recently, excuse me, I still have that South American airplane fumes blowing around in my throat right now.
Yeah, for coming back.
But just recently, you know, obviously the earthquake and tsunami in Japan. Well, people were afraid to go there. I mean, obviously. But we, you know, we had a little conversation about it, and we went on tour about a week and a half after the disaster. I wrote a song in response to, like, you know, the song's called "The World Is on the Way," you know, like, because, you know, when it was on TV and you could tell, like, everybody was getting involved from all over every country, sending money or just an awareness or, you know, something, just saying that, you know, you're not alone. We're there for you in either a monetary situation or, you know, in a spirit sense. And so I wrote the song and I gave it to the Japanese Red Cross, you know, just, you know, keep the money, do whatever you can for it. And we toured everywhere. We actually toured in some of the places, like a place called Morioka, which is near Sendai Prefecture, where the disaster was, you know, where, like, a lot of those people perished in the tsunami. And we did it from our hearts. You know, we weren't doing it for, like, big publicity or anything like that. We were doing great in Japan, but we wanted to, you know, do everything we could to show them some love, you know. And the Japanese folks have done so much for us, so, you know, we give it back, you know.
Love that. So, okay, so Lean Into It came out in 91, the album that obviously, you know, just made you guys studs across the world. So then, two-part question about...
Did you say studs?
I did, man. I mean, that's what you...
You know, it's ironic that you did say studs, because the first album, lots of dudes came to the gigs, right? It was like, because it was a lot of musos. You know, people were saying, like, we were Rush with a soul singer, you know, and we opened a Rush in that first tour, like our first album, and it was like thousands of guys watching Billy Sheehan play, thousands of guys watching Paul Gilbert play, and, like, you know, the girls that were, like, the ticket girls, a couple of them, like, maybe two or three, would, like, look at me and go, hey, he's okay. You know, and then Lean Into It came out, and, like, okay, studs is kind of harsh, and maybe gigolos. No, God, it was amazing, girls.
So, okay, but
thank Kevin for little and big girls. It was awesome.
So, okay, two-part question about it. Is it true you wrote it when you were a teenager? And then, what do you remember about the day or night you wrote it? And was it written about somebody in particular?
Well, I wrote it when I was about 16, 18, or, you know, around those years. And my sister used to have all these girlfriends. And I'd sit out in the, you know, I'd sit out in the front. We had a tree, a little old tree. And I'd just play guitar and just sing Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young songs or just, you know, some folky thing. And I just started singing this, I'm the one who wants to be with you, waiting on a line of greens and blues and all that kind of stuff. almost like a just kind of a loop, like a nursery rhyme or something. And all my sister's girlfriends would come out and check me out and listen to me. And I go, man, something's happening here. Is it a hit? Am I hot? And, you know, should I continue this line of work? I don't know. But I wrote it then, and I had the majority of it. And then, like, around 1988, I got together with this guy named David Graham. And he was a bass player, but he played Paul McCartney in a play called Beatlemania. And him and I were hooked up through a publishing company, and we were sitting there trying to come up with a song. And I go, hey, I have this song I wrote when I was a kid. It's called To Be With You, and it's actually about this girl that I really liked named Pat, and I wanted to be with her, and she just wanted me to be a friend. And I was, you know, like, there used to be controversy. It was like, why is he waiting on a line to be with this girl, right? There was a lot of dudes in front of me. And subsequently, we just became friends anyway. But so I showed it to David, this guy, this writer, and I said, okay, here's my song. And it kind of has this Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young, or, you know, Hollies type of kind of arrangement, and he kind of said, hey, well, let's make it kind of a Beatles-esque song. And he had that, like, four on the floor, like the bass drum, boom, and the hand clap, clap. And it was kind of like, give peace a chance, you know. All we are saying is give peace. I'm the one who wants, like that, right? Mm-hmm. And I went, ah, that's brilliant. And I played it for Paul Gilbert, and he loved it. He goes, oh, I love your little song. And then and in 1991, we recorded it, and we stuck it on the album, Lean Into It, as more of like a dessert for all the meat and potatoes that we were listening to, all the heavy rock stuff like Daddy, Brother, Lover, Little Boy, and, you know, just stuff like that. And it was a little dessert, little, you know, sorbet or whatever it was. But that dessert was more than a mouthful. I know, I'm totally fucking, I try to write a song, it ain't working. But it blew us away. I always knew there was a great song, but I, you know, no one could pick a hit, really. And the public, you know, we caught the public on a good day. And
well, I was going to ask you about that. Okay, I worked with a guy back in the day. Now, I never have known this is a true story or not, so I'm glad I finally get to ask you. So this is the DJ I worked with when I first started in radio. He told me that some station in Des Moines got a hold of that song, or somewhere in Iowa and started...
Nebraska.
Oh, it was Nebraska?
Lincoln, Nebraska. The guy, the DJ that, I don't know what did he call it back then, spun it, was a guy named John Terry. Pretty much think so. He's the, you know, like my gift horse. And he did a Smash or Trash dealio. And, you know, where people call up and go, that sucks, you know, throw it in the trash, or that's a smash. And people were calling. And it, from that, you know, Lincoln, Nebraska radio station, it spread like wildfire. And it was unbeknownst to us that, the same thing was, you know, catching fire like all over Europe and Asia. And when it became apparent that it was like, oh man, this song's doing something. Well, actually bigger than that. We were on the tour bus. No one's looking at Billboard magazine or, you know, the trade magazines. You know, we're a rock band. We don't care about that really. We just care like, hey man, more people are coming. And then me, you know, I'm going, more girls are coming. You know, thank God, man. Nobody's looking at, you know, like all those guys would be looking. Like, that sounds so kind of sexist, but I don't care. Because, like, all those millions of times where people are taking pictures of Paul Gilbert's fingers and writing notes down. And, you know, guys, come on, let's have a good time. You know, bring your girlfriend, you know, bring your sister. And so we were playing a club in Florida. In Daytona Beach, and we're playing this Guy V club called Finkies. you know, with peanut shells on the ground and wet feet, you know, because it's like right from the, you know, comes right off the beach. And we pull in to town where we're setting our gear up, and I was playing pinball, and I was looking up at the screen, and it had like one of the VJs from MTV, and he goes, "Okay, now the number one song in the country, To Be With You, Mr. Big." I'm like, "Duh." That's all I could do, "Duh." And I couldn't believe it. And then we started kind of researching, and like we didn't really have too much contact with our record company. They were just, you know, they did their thing and we did our thing. And we just started calling people and going, "What's going on?" And finding out that, you know, when you look in, there was a, you know, there's a magazine, a Billboard magazine, and you're looking in the back, oh, where you have, it's Hits of the World. Like all the, you know exactly what I'm talking about, but like the other folks don't. And you look in the back where it says like all these different countries. And To Be With You was either number one or number two in all of them, and or number of 10 or something. It was still going. And the cool thing about it was, you know, it was like about 3 weeks a hit, but it took for 20 weeks or something to come down. So it was constantly on the charts and on radio. And then Just Take My Heart was the second one, and they were, you know, two ships that pass in the night on the charts. It was really, that year was a really great year, and it still goes. I mean, it seems almost novelty to me, you know, because and I'm not second guessing the song. I've always loved the song. I love singing it. It's a folk kind of song, but it definitely has some soul to it for me anyway. And it's a really simple lyrical lament, but it goes over. And I'll tell you how it goes over. We were in Europe, and I was telling the guy, we were playing a place called Hellfest in France, right? Now you see where this is going, and I'm begging Billy Sheehan backstage, "Oh, please, man, I don't want to play this song. I'm going to get killed." You know, like I could just, you know, "Hold on, little girl," and see this like bottle flying up and hit me in the head. I could feel it. And Billy goes, "No, man, do it. You're gonna blow out." How many, you know, rock fans love that silly little song, you know, that little campfire song. And it's true. And they like nobody, you know, nobody's looking to their friend going, you know, or like, you know, when you see somebody crying in a movie and you go, "Dude, are you okay?" You know, the people were looking to their friends going, "Man, I love this tune," you know? And so, I don't know, maybe I'm, you know, I got, Billy was like, "Dude, you're paranoid, relax." People love that old song, you know? So,
hell of a song. So,
but it is kind of scary sometimes when you see the folks that are not aware of Mr. Big, you know, it's like, we definitely have a lot of, ballads and Just Take My Heart and To Be With You. We have another song, Promise of the Moon, Going Where the Wind Blows. We got a lot of them. But we have, you know, there's a lot of meat and potatoes too. And when you see these people, they're first timers coming in, and it's all, you know, the wall of rock comes at you for about 10 or 15 songs before you hear one of those ballads. It's like, yeah, people's hair standing up. It's pretty funny. All right, Dave-O, thanks. Or Dave, or Dave. Are you Dave-O when I know you? What's your nickname? Would it be Dio or Do or what would it be?
Pimps.
Would it be Doe? Yo, Doe. This is EM.
We need to have a beer someday, man. I look forward to it.
All right, brother. All right. I'll see you.
Take care, man.
Thanks. Bye.